Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com, Upwork.com.
Hello there, faithful viewer or friend of the podcast all around the world, and welcome back to a new episode of this Yes Over Screen podcast, where, as you'll have seen in the thumbnail and various places, we are discussing an animated movie this week that didn't get a cinema release, but part of the DC animated universe, the movie Justice Society World War II. There are reasons for that, which I'll get into briefly, but first of all, I wanted to introduce who's here with me, because obviously I never do this alone, so I'm joined by my usual co-host, DK.
Greetings from the surface of the sun.
Yeah, it feels like it at times. Hotter than the sun out here. And we're joined by a first-time guest, a fan of all things DC and especially animated by all accounts, Charles Dawson. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Hello. It's nice to be joined by you two as well.
No problem. No. Yeah, it's always good to meet a fellow fan. So, yeah, the reason for this review, it might seem a little bit random, but I did the plan for the podcast basically much earlier in the year, and there was a point when the movie Black Adam was going to be coming out around about now, which I know has the Justice Society in it. So the plan was to kind of try to catch the algorithm maybe with that and sort of introduce people to a Justice Society of sorts and make that relevant. But yeah, it turns out Black Adam's moved back. So,
yeah. You've kind of done it in a kind of good way as well, because they're just about to release the Stargirl season 3 broadcast
I'll use the opportunity to plug this episode when Stargirl season 3 launches and when Black Adam comes out for sure. But anyway, that was the logic behind this, but we all just like the DC animated films anyway, because I think we're all in agreement that it's pretty much the best stuff they're doing, more or less, DC at the moment.
That's the most successful thing they've ever done at the moment.
As you know, if you're a regular viewer or listener, we start with behind the scenes. Not a lot to talk about necessarily on this one, but as usual, I'm going to pass it over to DK for any kind of behind the scenes or information about Justice Society World War II.
Cool. Cheers, Mike. Well, as you say, there's not much on the behind the scenes front this time, I'm afraid. Animation's generally so well thought out and planned months ahead of time that unless something big happens in the, as in the case of Toy Story 2's deletion, or the company running things in completely incompetent, no comment, ways, then there's less chance of plans changing or things of a more spontaneous nature. But this is what I could find regarding this episode's production. Now, the first thing is that it didn't originally begin life as a JSA movie. On Inception, it was intended as a sole vehicle for Wonder Woman to screen on the now-defunct DC Universe streaming service. It was originally rejected, however, by Warner Brothers execs, as they believed that there was zero interest in a property that featured Wonder Woman as the main star. As we couldn't expect, those execs had their finger right on the pulse, as shortly afterwards, Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman was released shortly afterwards in 2017, proving just how on the
was going to say, yeah, she's like one of the three top ones, as if they're not going to be interested.
DC with their power of fantastic lack of foresight, as usual.
This movie's part of the Tomorrowverse continuity of the animated series, named after the animated film Superman Man of Tomorrow, also comprising of Batman Long Halloween and Green Lantern Beware My Power. It does settle the potential idea of a Justice League in this continuity, but whether it'll continue long enough to go fully in that direction, who knows?
I've just remembered a little behind-the-scenes thing that I wanted to point out as well. Sorry to interject. This is just a little bit of a bugbear that I have with the people that make the DVDs and Blu-rays, is that I didn't realise they were going to keep this continuity having its own kind of thing. So they're doing an ongoing thing where it's clearly going to spell out DC Universe, because it currently has DCU, but only on the films that are in the Tomorrowverse, which is really annoying, because I've got Injustice and Catwoman Hunted haven't got those markings on, and now they're after Green Lantern, even though they came out before
This is the pet peeve that I have with this, because when they started this and they realized that they were actually making this sleeve, right? I originally bought it on normal DVD, as I did all my others. Then there were some, like The Son of Batman, that I couldn't at the time get on normal DVD, at which point I got them on Blu-ray. So because I'm OCD kind of thing, it meant like it didn't really match. And then they had the Showcase shorts on the Blu-rays, at which point I just completely diverted to the Blu-rays. So I ended up buying the normal DVDs with the sleeves that was going to spell out DC Universe. But then I had to go to the Blu-rays, at which point I had to buy it again. But then by the time I went to rebuy it, some had the sleeves and some didn't. But if you buy a DVD with this sleeve on, like with a sleeve and not one with not the sleeve, or if you buy one with a normal DVD, neither match. So you either have to have normal DVD with the sleeve, normal DVD without, the Blu-ray with the sleeve or Blu-ray without. You can't have a mixed match of any other that doesn't work.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's annoying. I'm just annoyed because now I have films that were released before Green Lantern after it, because I have to. Otherwise, the spines won't line up. But anyway, that's just my pet peeve.
Homer, who voices Barry Allen, Stan Akatic, who plays Wonder Woman, previously worked together on DC animated movie Superman Unbound as Superman and Lois Lane. Both have worked on other DC voice actors, with Katic playing Talia al Ghul in Batman Arkham City, while Matt plays our favourite depressed ex-fighter pilot, Larry Trainer, in HBO Max's Doom Patrol series.
Doom Patrol. Cancel Doom Patrol and we riot.
He's definitely. Now, during the course of the movie, it's revealed that Barry didn't travel into the past, as he thought, and instead travelled to a parallel reality. This is based on the pre-crisis comic book concept. Well, if they're tuning in now, mate. it's based on the pre-crisis comic book concept of the Justice Society, Denizens of Earth 2, Runners 1, where the majority of DC's heroes resided. So then we've had multiple crises where that status has flip-flopped, but as I understand it, as of this moment, they're currently known to exist in-universe as part of the same reality as the Trinity. As comic fans will know, the multiverse has played an enormous part in DC continuity over the years and has led to some of the best stories in the company's history. That was, of course, before the multiverse concept was used as an excuse to explain away the results of every dumbass exec decision.
Well, and we can blame Crisis on Infinite Earths for that, really, can't we?
Yeah, and that's it for this. As I said, there wasn't much in anything else I found, you know, continuity minutiae that even the most ardent comic book fan might find a little dry, such as the colour of Aquaman's gloves, for example. So anything any of you guys would like to add?
No, I mean, I was just going to say, like I said, I wasn't sure whether to mention it now or in the review, but I was quite surprised by that twist, because this was the first time I'd seen the movie. So I was shocked when they revealed, he hasn't gone to the past, he's gone to the other Earth. And like I said, confusingly, the Justice Society are actually from Earth 1 in the comics, and Earth 2 is the main one, which baffles me no end, especially considering then the Flash TV show did the opposite, confusing everything even more. So,
which continuity? Because as I understand it, the flip-flopped which is coming from where.
Oh, fair enough. Right, so before we jump into the review, then, just to kind of get everybody used to each other and just as a kind of palate cleanser sort of thing, what we have been doing is some fun little games relate to the episode that we're doing, sort of the review in question and such. So I came up with this one this week, so blame me if you don't like it. It's going to basically mean that Charles and DK, you two are competing with each other. So the game in question, I mentioned to DK earlier today, the game is a game that I called DC or BS, which is an intriguing title, I'm sure. So what it is, I have a list of, I'm not sure how many, I think between 25 and 30 characters. I'm going to shout out the name of a character, and then you have to tell me, whether that character is from DC or either somewhere else or just completely made up. So is it DC or am I talking BS?
Oh,
I think you know the answer. You want to risk it. You're the first one to shout their name and then give me the answer. If you get it wrong, of course, you lose a point.
The name first.
Yes, please. Yeah, yeah. Just like in lieu of a buzzer, basically. And then, as I say, if you give the wrong answer, that's 1 point less. If you give the right answer, that's 1 point for you.
So how does it work then? How do you, like, how do you shout out first? Just shout it out, like.
Just shout your name. If you think you do, like, if I, as soon as I've said the name, if you want to shout your name out, if you think you know it, then you've got like a couple of seconds to answer. But as I said, if you do give it the wrong answer, if you guess the wrong way, you would lose a point rather than gain.
Yeah.
And, or your opponent would get the point rather, basically. but yeah, that's probably the best.
Let's see how well I do then, because most of my list at the moment have been to do with Doctor Who related things.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, maybe best not to jump straight in if you're not sure, but we'll see how it goes anyway. These list of characters, what I'm going to do is shout out the name. And the first thing on the list is Beard Hunter, DC or BS?
DK.
Oh, that's DC.
That was DC. So I'm not sure if your connection was a little slow there, Charles, or what, but I did hear DK saying his name first. Shout your name out, Charles, if you think you know it, first of all. But we all know where that's from, I think, basically, Charlie. So I don't need to go too much into that. Yeah, Doom Patrol. Sounds weird, completely not made up, is an actual DC character. The second one, Matter Eater Lad.
Oh, DC.
Oh, DK again. Charles, you have to shout your name before you give the answer.
Shout my name before I give the answer.
Yes, please, yeah. So, DK, what are you saying? Sorry.
It's a DC.
It's, Matter Eater Lad is indeed a DC character. Yes, well done. The third one on my list, The Shoveler. Is that DC or BS?
DK. That's in Mystery Men, that's DC.
I'm going to give you that one, Charles, but you still didn't shout your name out. because you knew where it was from. So. Right. Shoveler was from Mystery Men. So the next one on the list, Willoughby Kipling, DC or
DK?
That's DK again, sorry.
DC.
That's DC, yeah. It was another Doom Patrol, which of course you were always going to get. Weren't you? Right.
The next obsessive one, is not the word, mate.
I know, right? The next one on the list, Rose and Thorn.
Charles.
Charles?
Is that a made up character?
No, that's 1 point to DK. Rose and Thorn are a DC character. It's a woman with a split personality, where it's a woman named Rose who becomes a sort of streetwise vigilante named Thorn in kinky green leather. we'll all be looking that up, I'm sure, after this episode.
It sounds very like the one from Doom Patrol.
Yeah, there's a lot of similar type characters. I mean, you know, comic books, a lot of.
One character I've not actually heard of, that character.
Look it up, Rose and Thorn from DC, definitely worth a look. Right, the next one on the list, the Phantom Flan Flinger.
DK.
Charles.
DK? DK, sorry? That's BS, yeah, that's actually from Tiz Was.
Bad memories.
The next one, Scratch and Sniff.
Charles.
Charles?
Scratch and Sniff. That sounds made up.
That is not so much made up. It's actually the name of two dog puppets from CBBC. The next one on the list, Captain Marvel, DC or BS? DK?
DC.
It's DC, yes. The original name of Shazam. Thought I might have caught some of you out with that one, but I guess not.
That's a trick question, that, though, because it's also from Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, technically it is both, but there is one in the DC universe, which is the all I'm really looking for. But yeah, the next one on the list, Captain Yesterday.
Charles.
Charles?
Yeah. That sounds made up.
Yeah, that's actually Fry from Futurama when he got superpowers. So... Animal, vegetable, mineral man.
Charles? Yeah, for that's from Doom Patrol, isn't it, DC?
Yeah, that is the villain from Doom Patrol, the slightly bizarre mixture of things. Dinosaur, human, plant. right. The next one on the list, Bon Voyage.
Charles, that's...
Charles?
That's it's from The Incredibles as a villain.
Yes, that is the villain from The Incredibles. You recognised it. Awesome. The next one is Batman Well.
Charles.
DK?
BS.
Yeah, that's BS. That's a character from the Tick TV show. right. Cock King is the next one.
Charles.
Charles?
You say, Ziv, I can get it right. Did you say Clock King?
No, Cock King.
Cock King. Oh, yeah, that's not that's made up, isn't it?
No, that actually is a real character who appeared in the current season of Harley Quinn. So,
it is
a man named after a cockerel.
I've not seen that's because I've not seen it yet because I can't get it in there. I've not seen it yet.
The next ridiculous character, Arm Fall Off Boy. DC, you'll be.
Oh, get Charles.
Charles?
Yeah, is that. That's either the TDK from the Suicide Squad or it's from the Legion of Superheroes, isn't it?
Both the same thing, just James Gunn gave him a different name. But yeah, he's on Legion of Superheroes. He's also the detachable kid from the Suicide Squad. It is exactly like it sounds. He is a guy who could just rip off his arms and throw them at you. Great. next up, Radioactive Man.
Charles.
Charles?
Charles, that's from The Simpsons. Yeah, that's from The Simpsons.
Of course, you were all going to know where that was from. That was from The Simpsons, naturally. The next one on the list, The Sex Men.
DK. DC.
It is DC. They are a group from the Doom Patrol comics and TV series.
Oh, believe yeah, it or yeah.
Not. Sounds made up, but it's not. okay, the next one, Bat Cow.
Charles? Is that from the Cartoon Network show? Because I've got the Funko Pop of it.
No, there is actually a Bat Cow in DC Comics, believe it or not. I'll have to give that to TK.
There is. There's also, that's Super Cow I'm thinking of, isn't it? That's Super Cow I'm thinking of, not Bat Cow.
Yeah. The next one on the list then is Dr. Demento. Is that DC or BS? Nobody's risking it.
I'm going to say DK.
DK?
BS?
Yeah, that's BS. That's actually a musician. Dr. Demento is a musician and DJ from America. Sounds like a superhero or a villain, though, doesn't it?
If this was a I'm not good at music at all.
Yeah, fair enough. So the next one on the list is Liesel Pon.
DK? I'm going to go with DC.
Yes, it is DC. It's a sentient bacteria that is somehow a member of the Green Lantern Corps.
I knew it, Ronald.
the next one on the list, Brother Power the Geek.
DK.
Charles.
DK.
That's DC, definitely.
That is DC, yeah. You're absolutely right. The next one is Detective Chimp.
DK. Charles.
DK.
DC.
That is DC as well, yes. And the next one on a similar note, Hit Monkey. Oh, silence.
DK?
DK?
I'm going to go with BS.
It is BS because the only Hitmonkey is the one from Marvel. The next one on the list, again, this is easy. Danny the Street.
DK.
DK?
DC.
That's DC, of course, named for Danny LaRue. Right. Nuclear Man. No, nobody.
That's Simpsons.
Is that your answer, Charles?
Yeah.
No, Nuclear Man is actually from Superman 4: The Quest for Peace. So again, I have to give that to DK.
Oh, is he the DC? That's also a bit of a trick thing, because there's a superhero in Simpsons called Nuclear Man.
I know there's Radioactive Man. I'm not sure if there's Nuclear Man, but I do know that there's definitely the guy from Superman 4.
Yeah, because Homer becomes Radioactive Man in one of the episodes, and there's like a sort of Justice League that he's with, and there's one of them is in a yellow sort of Reverse Flash costume, and he's called Nuclear Man. So, but there is also that blonde, the blonde muscular man from Quest of Peace, which is obviously the villain from Quest of Peace.
Yeah, everyone used to think it was Doppelganger.
I was thinking of the first one I thought of was the one from Simpsons, from that one.
Yeah. Oh, well, sorry about that. There is definitely one in the DC. So, yeah, the next one on the list is Muckman.
Charles, I'm gonna say that's fake.
Yeah, that's actually from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Charles.
Well, I guess not in DC. You know, like.
Yeah. As long as it's not in DC, you're good.
Yeah, is Ninja Turtles part of DC though? Because they crossed over in comics before.
No. It's Mirage Comics, I think, officially that has the license to them, so I don't count that. Right. So the next one is Dog Welder.
DK. I believe. That's DC.
Believe it or not, that is DC, and yes, that is exactly what it sounds like. It is just a man who welds dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I'm not even gonna go near that. The next thing on the list, Laughlees.
DK. DC. I had to write an essay on this dude.
That's DC, the original, or one of the original Orange Lanterns, I believe. So yeah. The next one, there's only three more, so the next one on the list, Punchline.
Oh, that's from DC. That's from the Suicide Squad.
I'll give you it, Charles, even though you didn't shout your name first, because it is from DC, not from Suicide Squad, but it's just Joker's current girlfriend after breaking up with Harley Quinn.
is that the one from the Doomsday Clock?
Oh, as well. Possibly. I don't know. I don't know the actual comics. I hear things in passing and see cosplays, and I'm like, all right, that's a new character. Fair enough. So, yeah. So the next one, the second last one on the list then, Gizmo Duck.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, Gizmo Duck.
Gizmo Duck?
Yeah.
Is that one fake?
Is that your guess?
I'll say yeah.
Yeah, it's actually from DuckTales. Yeah. I used to love Gizmo Duck when I was a kid. He's kind of a Superman sort of homage in that he's a geeky dude with glasses, but then gets like a cool RoboCop outfit with a single wheel and becomes Gizmo Duck. Look it up, kids. God. He's a cool hero. And the final one then.
I'm sad you never mentioned the Shadow or the Phantom as like guesses.
Yeah. Oh, man, I could have done this all day, but I have one last one, and the last one is Gleek.
DK.
DK?
DC.
Yeah, that's DC. That's the Wonder Twins pet monkey, lizard, alien thing.
Yeah, I've got that as a Funko Pop. That's one they referenced in the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths in Arrowverse, isn't it? At the end of Legend of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, never saw it.
That's it.
Yeah, disappointing. Although there was a reference to it in Smallville, but it was just like... an emoji on their phone or something stupid, but anyway. So at the end of that round of this game, then Charles, you scored 9 points, but DK, you stormed it with 19 points.
I think it's a good thing to do.
It's surprising. Some of the things that are real are surprising, and some of the ones that I made up were just fun things that I thought people might know from pop culture if you were listening along. So if you're of a certain age like me, you probably do know like Tiz Wars and Gizmo Duck and whatnot. So, but awesome.
There's also a lot. I've not seen the second season of Doom Patrol yet. Because I've got it on DVD, but I've got a backlog of like things I'm watching. So. What some of the names you mentioned, I'll go, I know what he's on about now.
Yeah, Sex Men in particular was the one that I hadn't heard of until Doom Patrol season 2, but they are in the comics, so yeah. They are really from both. But
and torture.
Yes, exactly. Oh, DK, you've clearly got some comic books of theirs somewhere in a cupboard, haven't you?
I have some signed first run Grant Morrison's.
Oh, I'm just gonna take you off the call, you did. Oh, that's cool. Grant Morrison's a great writer. Great. Right, so
That was a fun quiz.
Glad you guys enjoyed it. That's cool. Yeah, we'll jump into the main review now, which, as I've mentioned up top, is going to be Justice Society World War II, the DC animated film, part of the Tomorrowverse, which started with Superman Man of Tomorrow, so it's all in that same continuity. The very first thing I made a note of, because I was kind of curious, is who they class as the Justice Society in this movie. So I was taking notes of which heroes turned up as we went along, because it doesn't seem like it's a massive team if you go off the front of the box, but that's because they're trying to avoid spoilers and stuff. So if anybody's curious, the Justice Society in this movie consists of Wonder Woman, the Carter Hall version of Hawkman, Dinah Lance Black Canary, the Rex Tyler Hourman, the Jay Garrick Flash, Dr. Fate, but he's actually out of commission and insane, some sort of Aquaman, that's an actual line of dialogue from the movie, and Superman, eventually. That line of dialogue when she said that, oh, we've been helped by some sort of Aquaman. I was like, oh, shades of probably some kind of Suicide Squad. Yeah.
The one thing I'm surprised that DK didn't mention, like, I don't know which one does the behind the scenes stuff.
That's DK.
Was also like to do with the Justice Society movie, was that they originally had a lot of a bigger team for the film that they'd written in the script, and what happened was they wrote quite a lot of them, you know, like things like, I can't remember the exact characters, but they'd put in ones like, for example, like I think Wildcat was one of them as an example, where they'd written them in because they really wanted to see these characters, like the main, you know, like the ones that are in Stargirl, like a lot of those, and they've kind of written them in and kind of gone, well, what they realized was that the ones that were important to the story and just in general, a lot of them weren't getting the development and weren't getting the screen time that was needed. So whatever they said or did didn't have a lot of impact. So they decided that instead of just making it like a film with loads of heroes in, that was just going to do like very minor things, they decided to reduce the amount of team members that was in the film and only put the ones in that actually were going to progress the story and characters forward. So they took a lot of them out. And so I think in total they took 5 out in total, and then kept the ones that you see in the film. And the ones that they took out, they said, if this JSA film does well, then we can make like a spin-off type film and continue the continuity. I was hoping that they'd do a second one, because the person I think believe plays Jay Garrick, he said he's a first timer to this type of thing. So, or at least this character anyway. So he said that he hopes that it gets another one because he really enjoyed playing it. And then he also spoke to John Wesley Shipp, who plays Jay Garrick, about, and then he read some of the comics to do with JSA and Jay Garrick. So that the main characters had that development. So if there's a small amount, there's a lot of people did say, oh, you know, the JSA didn't have a very big team in that film, but that was because they wanted to make sure that they actually did something, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, it's debatable, questionable perhaps a little bit that they got a ton of development for everybody in here anyway, but I think the Justice Society are popular enough thanks to things like Black Adam and Stargirl that I can see them doing another movie, hopefully, even if it means just setting it on Earth 1 or 2 or whichever one this is. As you'll know if you're a regular listener anyway, just to go over what we're doing, to do the review, we don't really do it chronologically or anything. It breaks down into sections. We have like acting, directing, animation, etc. I'll be taking the lead because I've got the notes kind of organized and filed in the right kinds of places. And I'll obviously be jumping to you guys for your opinions because we've all watched the movie. So we all know what we think about these things. So the first thing on my list would normally be acting, but obviously in this case is voice acting. And the first person that I've noted down here is Stana Katic as Wonder Woman. And again, me and I discussed this a little bit before we started. But the first thing you have to say with this is, yeah, what is the deal with that accent? What is she doing? Because it's... is it supposed to be, like I mentioned to DK, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be, is she meant to be mimicking Gal Gadot and it's meant to be Israeli? Is it some kind of,
like, yeah, is it that's standard? What it, that is what it's supposed to, that's what I think it's meant to do. It's meant to, because obviously when a lot of people heard Gal Gadot, from my opinion personally, I like wasn't certain on whether I liked the fact that I heard her sound different. Like, you know, I didn't know she was from Israeli in first until I Googled her. But then because it didn't match what, you know, after hearing Linda Carter and stuff like that and all the animated versions of her, whether I was going to go, does the accent make a difference or not really? Because I struggled to kind of understand what she was saying. And then the more she spoke, it then just, like, it's a bit like Bane or anything like that, you know, from Dark Knight Rises. When you hear a character at first and they speak in a certain way, you might not, you're not used to that way of talking. And then as soon as you listen to it more, like, you start to understand what they're saying. So then I think that's what it was trying to do. It was trying to mimic the Gal Gadot one.
There's a few moments in the film where, as I've mentioned again to DK, we mentioned before we started sort of officially recording, it's obvious they're taking the success of Wonder Woman, because there's a couple of action scenes where the music is trying its best to be Hans Zimmer and the action is almost exactly like some of the moments from that movie in the World War One trenches and fighting alongside the tanks and stuff. And yeah, you can see that's definitely the inspiration. But if that is the case, I kind of like, I've never had an issue with Gal Gadot's accent because it's her actual accent and it just kind of sounds exotic and kind of, okay, these people are from another island.
I think when I heard her voice accent, the only thing I had with it was, as I said, it wasn't in, like, for the first time, like, for like the first 10 minutes, 20 minutes I watched it, I wasn't sure whether it's, I had nothing problem with Gal Gadot herself. It was like, I didn't know if it suited, like, whether she could change the accent or something. But then after she came, you know, after I just watched the film, I actually I kind of thought to myself, well, do you know what? I actually like the fact that she's doing that, because it's the fact that they do a similar thing in Doctor Who where they try and get people's accent, they try to change people's accents. But then when they are allowed to use their own accent, it's nice, because at the end of the day, if you told me what Wonder Woman was and what I said to what to other people what Wonder Woman is, the accent doesn't make a difference to this character at all.
No. But I will say, it doesn't, like, the reason that I bring it up, though, is that I just think whatever Katic is doing, it's neither something or anything, and it just comes off sounding weird, and it's like pseudo-Russian, and I just think it would have been, like, I know she can do just a straight up American accent because she's been in, like, crime dramas, procedurals and stuff that I've watched. And I just don't get what the decision was, because if it was to imitate Gal Gadot, it doesn't sound even remotely like her.
It comes quite jarring.
Yeah. So that kind of threw me out of the movie, especially considering that I thought it was actually a good thing that for once they actually position Wonder Woman as the leader of this particular Justice Society group. And I was like, that's cool, because you very rarely get a chance to see that, as we've discussed, because Wonder Woman, they don't think is popular or whatever. There is an intriguing mention of the fact that I think this Earth version of Superman mentions, oh, I'm sorry about the loss of Themyscira. I haven't seen any of the other movies, but I don't think it's obviously been addressed there, because this Justice Society haven't appeared. But that's potentially something we could deal with in a sequel. And I was kind of intrigued by that, of the idea of this is a Wonder Woman that's lost her home and got adopted by the US and immediately kind of encrypted into the war to try and, help protect US interests or whatever. So I thought that was an interesting angle, but again, not really enough time to explore it just yet.
Because when I've Googled JSA, like, a lot, like, from the 1940s, they do mention Wonder Woman and Superman as part of the JSA.
They were back in the day. That's why, the DC continuity got messed. It was all weird, and it was like, well, because they already exist, but we now need new versions, we're just going to see those ones were in the past or a different Earth.
I've never really classed them as part of the JSA.
Society, I mean, they did have Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, but like I said, that's why I think it was with Crisis on Infinite Earth the first time they were like, well, because we can't claim they're the same ones, that was just a different Earth that they were around that long ago. And yeah, it got really weird. anyway, yeah, that's DC. But no, I think they're all native to there, apart from Barry, the Barry Allen Flash, which, again, that was the next character, because we've mentioned it was Matt Bomer who voiced him, who we know as Negative Man from the Doom Patrol series. And I thought, yeah, it was interesting because he was a very different portrayal to Larry Trainer, which, I mean, I know Matt Bomer is a great actor. I know he can do different things. I've seen him on, like, American Horror Story and stuff as well. But this character is way more of a doofus and way more, like, outwardly heroic. And I thought it was good. It was a great portrayal of Barry Allen, who's a character that I personally connect quite a lot with. So that was a good sort of casting choice, I thought, as well.
Yeah, I think he's a good job.
I don't know. I know this is more part of the animation more than the voice, but I thought that costume quite resembled the Flash 90 costume quite a bit.
Yeah, the animation style, I think, is quite classic in that way. But yeah, you were saying, DK, about Bat Boba?
Yeah, I think he's a very good actor. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves when it comes to just voice acting. No. He's absolutely fantastic. And yeah, you can tell it's him, obviously, but it's such a world away from Larry Trainer, and I think he did a good job. I'd like to see him appear again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm with you. I think Matt Bomer should be way more famous, perhaps, than he actually is. But at the same time, if we've got big hitters like him and Brendan Fraser in Doom Patrol or all of that cast, actually, we're not going to get rid of them, so that's good. But no, I mean, those were the two kind of main roles that had a lot to do in the movie. But I did make a note of a few things, like there's an actor called Omid Abtahi who plays Hawkman. Unfortunately, he's kind of reduced to virtually a cameo, in my opinion. There's not a lot there, except to clarify that he is the Egyptian one that resurrects lots of times and goes looking for his Kiara Saunders or whatever it is. So you had to have the perfunctory, "I'm going to die, but it's fine because I'm going to be resurrected." And I was like, yeah, I don't love this. We could have done without this. We've seen this. Maybe it's just because I've seen it so many times because of watching Legends and then seeing the Smallville version and cartoon and everything. So
the fact that they've now cast, in a lot of outward media, they've now cast Hawkman as this kind of immortal man. There is a character in DC that is constantly resurrected every time he dies, and they seem to be imposing that on Hawkman, as it were. And I think he's so much more of an interesting character when he isn't that, you know. When he can,
to be honest, I've always much preferred the alien Thanagarian version, to be honest. So
that's fair,
I'm always
enough,
a bit disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems to be, I'm dead. Oh, just brush it off, get on with the next one. And that, to me, were never a subset of his powers.
I don't know if it was Legends the first one to do it, but I think it is a side effect of them trying to position Vandal Savage, who is the guy who can be resurrected.
They did it in Smallville first, they touched upon it in
Justice League Unlimited as well, but it was just he was a reincarnation and that's why he wanted to get with Shiera, but he didn't kind of stress that were his go-to deal, if you know what I mean.
I mean, at least Legend specified that, yes, there's kind of a multiple lives thing, but it's not the same personality as such. It's not necessarily the same person. It's kind of a Doctor Who or Jadzia Dax kind of situation, I guess.
One thing I hate is, like, characters dying, and whether if they're resurrected or not, or whatever happens to them, like, there's no consequence to it.
There's rich stuff there you could have explored, but I think this movie wasn't really interested in doing all of that. And on a random side note, I was kind of like, I would have preferred some kind of explanation as to why all these people who are not American were conscripted into the war and decided to fight for them. Because, like, Hawkman's Egyptian, Wonder Woman is... question mark.
I'm looking at that until you said it, then.
But it's like, so, like, and the one American hero they've got is apathetic at first and kind of like, no, I'm not getting involved. And that's freaking Superman. It's like, oh, come on, you know. So
Just going back to the Hawkman thing, and if there's any long time DC readers out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the whole reincarnation thing was introduced as a way to get around continuity errors of the actual character. You know how earlier you were saying
that before,
the Batman and Superman they were on Earth, whatever, as part of the JSA, and it messed up continuity. Yeah. When they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths, it retconned most of it. The one thing they didn't retcon was Hawkman, and they made such a mess of it that they ended up having to do 0 hour Crisis in Time to explain away the multiple Hawkmans during the regular now DC continuity. And I think that's where they introduced this mainstay of him being reincarnated. But you got, as you say, the Thanagarian police officer. You got the one that was in the JSA, and he just kind of, I think they've just rolled with it since then.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, because like you said, it was like, in a film like this, it would have been nice to have that impact, and that death at the very end, he even is like, I think he says at one point, oh, I'll be back and I'm coming to see you, Shire, and stuff, and I was like, that's completely not impactful because you're just pointing out, like, that doesn't matter. And so, like, at that point in the film, I wanted there to be stakes, and I was like,
exactly.
If somebody had actually, you know, died for real, like, oh, wow, this is a real fight, we're getting involved, but I knew it was
so unnecessary. He takes the impact of the character and just think, well, it's irrelevant. Yeah. He's coming back anyway.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. But now, speaking of which, as I was talking about Superman, we have Darren Criss, who has been voicing him since Man of Tomorrow. Not an actor I'm too familiar with. I know he was in Glee or something like that back in the day, but does a fine job portraying our Superman in, again, basically a cameo. I haven't watched Man of Tomorrow yet. I'll get around to it. I promise. But yeah,
playing the main version of...
I haven't watched half of the DC animated films I've got yet, dude. I will get to it, but that's why I wanted to review one, because at least I was forced to sit down and watch this one.
Oh, it's amazing. I realised it.
I've heard good things. I've heard good things. But yeah, I liked his portrayal for what I saw of it from Our Superman. But as I hinted at before, I absolutely hate the portrayal of the JSA world Superman, because I know they tried to justify it. Though he wasn't raised by the kids, it was in an orphanage. But to me, Superman would still never be that apathetic and uncaring of, like, I'm reporting about all these atrocities, but I'm not getting involved. Oh, go on, I will then, because the Flash told me to. I was like, yeah, this is not that character at all. It's just really jarring.
The police, Superman, basically had him saying that he came from an orphanage. And I remember that from when I've watched those recently. I watched them back recently, and he says that again. They're from, you know, Superman's from an orphanage.
What's that? What was that from?
The Fleischer cartoons.
Oh, the cartoons, the Fleischer cartoons. Yeah, I thought it might have been an allusion as well to the Flashpoint timeline, where it was like he was a bit more cynical because he was captured by the government and experimented on and stuff, but. Just being raised in an orphanage, I don't think, like I said, I can't excuse that kind of thing, especially when it's somebody who's literally in the trenches as a reporter. And I was surprised at that reveal when they revealed that Shakespeare was Superman. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no.
The thing is, though, if someone's coming from an orphanage, you'd kind of, you know, you'd know what it feels like to be, like, on your own. If someone's taken you in, either as a foster parent or even in the orphanage, you'd be grateful for that. So you would then want to make sure that, you know, that the something that you didn't have or something that you wanted, you could give to somebody else. So you would, you know, so I think, as you said, Superman would be a bit, especially because that's the character he is anyway, he would be a bit more, like, hopeful and a bit, you know,
I mean, I could accept it a little bit more if it was just like he was staying out of it and didn't want to know and buried his head in the sand. But the fact that he's a war reporter is like he's seeing all this stuff, knows what he can do, and he's still just like, nah, I'm not getting involved. It's kind of unforgivable. Do you know what I mean? It's like I can't support that characterization of this character because he just doesn't really care. what was your thoughts on that, DK? Did you have a similar thing to me? Or
the weird thing is just for, I mean, disregarding. Know his actual motive when he turned up, that bloody mustache made me think it was Floyd Lawton, aka Deadshot. Deadshot's in this, and then when it turned out, I was actually disappointed when it turned out to be Clark because, as you say, the characterization is so off base. I don't care where he was brought up, you could not physically, I mean, any war correspondent. That's exposed to horrors like that, they would want to get involved. So when someone's actually the power to get involved and do something about it, I think it just portrays him as a very selfish character, and I don't think that's... There seems to be a cynical side of Superman that DC media in recent years have brought forward, and I don't like it. To me, he's the big boy scout.
I mean, exactly.
I don't know what your opinions are on Man of Steel, like, but in my opinion, I don't like Man of Steel, like, at all. And so the thing is, for my opinion, like, I found that actually they were portraying a very similar version to Clark in that to the Man of Steel Bearing in mind that as well that they had a lot of negative reception to that version and that portrayal.
Yeah.
I'm a bit surprised that they then went with that direction, because if they got that negative reaction, I'm just a bit like, why would you then repeat the same mistake?
Yeah, they don't seem to know what they want to do, though, because by the one hand, that gets a negative response. But then by the other hand, you've got stuff like Injustice, which does absolute gangbusters. And that's all about, like, oh, what if Superman was evil because he was just pushed too far? And again, I've never liked that because...
I've never been able to take to that.
No, me neither. No.
There was a comic book back in the limited series. It was an Elseworlds one. I don't know if either of you read it. Called Justice League, The Nail.
Yes. Yeah,
I've got it.
And that was fantastic. It's an Elseworlds. And now they seem to be thinking, oh, it worked in this Elseworlds. Let's take it, make him a bastard, and throw him in main continuity. I don't like this at all, this attitude that they're taking.
I think that's my thoughts with regards to the Zack Snyder version, is that Snyder clearly watched Injustice and was like, oh, Superman's a badass, and didn't realize that's not supposed to be the main universe. Like, Superman, that's not how you characterize him, you know?
If they'd said, because it actually came out on a stupid interview and said, by the way, I forgot to mention that I'm not actually portraying my Snyderverse as... like the main continuity, he did say this is meant to be on parallel universe, and I'm like, no, you're only saying that because of the negative reaction, you know, the reception to it, and now you're trying to defend your take on it. Now, if they had specifically said, look, we're doing a darker version, these aren't the characters that you are aware of and know and are familiar with, we're doing this type of version, then I'd have gone with it. Like, for example, like an Elseworlds and Injustice.
Yeah, like Gods and Monsters does something like that, yeah.
They are specifically saying these aren't the normal versions. So, you know, because I have a big thing about, I really don't like the version of Superman in the DCU.
Just to finish off the voice acting kind of thing, I thought Steve Trevor was really good. It was clear that he had more characterization than most of the JSA heroes, I didn't look up the voice actor, but I thought he was doing a great job of the heroic, great character, and points out kind of ridiculousness of the thing, which is great. You need that kind of, I think, human input character to point out how silly things get sometimes, especially when they go as batshit as this film did at the end. Jay Garrick I've always liked, much like I know Charles has, but again, he didn't seem to have much to do in this film other than to basically be backup for Barry Allen and for Wonder Woman to be able to go, oh, we have a Flash. Didn't seem the to only do a reason, lot else.
The only reason I like Jay Garrick in this is because other than the Arrowverse, we don't really see any version of Jay Garrick apart from a cameo in The New Frontier. So even though, as you said, that characterization, like, I was just happy to, like, see these because they also, with all the DC films that they've done in the animated wise, you know, they've never really focused on the JSA properly. So I liked the idea that they were finally doing that and giving them a little bit of focus, and that over time, hopefully, they would characterize them. But I was just grateful to see, you know, this version of Flash portrayed in a more modern time.
Yeah, related to that in a kind of story point of view, though, I was also really confused and kind of not on board with the idea of, oh, because there's two of you taking power from the Speed Force, it's weakening you. Because I was like, hang on, isn't there like 17 speedsters in the main universe?
Yeah.
And they never mentioned anything about, oh, there's too many of you tapping in, you're weakened.
The whole point is that the only time the Speed Force is ever weakened or anything like that is when you do something either to it or when you do something that you're not meant to. If they're basically saying, the Speed Force is weakened because there's two of you because you're from a parallel universe, well, why are so many speedsters traveling back and forth in time or perhaps different universes then? You know,
it was kind of like, you know, yeah, I mean? The writers didn't really know the specifics, and they just wanted an excuse to kind of have, I guess, the two Flashes working together. But it just,
I think it was
it jars when you know these more, things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I felt it more was a case of they weren't trying to, because obviously there's loads of things that speeders can do. So I think what they were trying to do was, if say Flash could take out all these villains all at once, because there's a lot of things that a speedster can do, but which would be more powerful than a whole team put together. So I think they were just trying to make an excuse as why these speedsters weren't as powerful as they seemed.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. But anyway, yeah, moving on, just to quickly finish off the acting stuff, I thought the Our Man character, I just thought was too full of self-pity and kind of doesn't do a lot. He was always complaining about his limitations, but he does get one nice bonding moment with Carter, with Hawkman, so I guess that was nice. And finally, I was confused at first why Aquaman was kind of pompous and rude, then realized it's just, there's no point in that being Aquaman because he's mind controlled and it's not the character. It's literally like a Nazi, and I was like, oh, well, there's literally, like, if I was a fan of Aquaman, I'd be really annoyed by that. I'm not especially, but
this bugs me. I know it's going into the writing a little, but I lost it after the Aquaman section because it just seemed to lose focus, and then it concentrated more on the Atlanteans, and the Nazis were just forgotten at that point.
I had the exact same problem.
It could have been any DC movie.
It could have been anything. You're absolutely right, and it was kind of it's a similar thing to me that what happens with the live action movies, in that they kind of realized they had to have a big epic showdown in the last act, and then, like you said, forgot the fact that they had an army of Nazis and were like, I know, giant underwater kaiju and an Atlantean army. And at that point, like you said, it's kind of like, well, this has nothing to do with the Justice Society or World War II. It's just nonsense. So,
it's like Cthulhu by way of Pacific Rim.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I would say that giant crab did make me want some crab corn soup. So, you know, it's spurred on my next takeaway menu. So I've got to give it credit for that.
I mean, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm not a seafood fan myself, but you do you. No, I was with you on that completely. But just to try and, again, to keep us moving through this stuff, then I only have a couple of notes on the direction. The director is a man called Jeff Wamster, which I took a note of because I thought he did quite a good job. I like the fact that he makes the different universes, what I thought were initially different eras, look different. Like there is sort of a World War II feel to that universe, for me at least. I thought there was a bit more of the classic look, maybe a bit like the older cartoons and stuff. And I liked the actual classic sort of bright, shiny style of the Tomorrowverse that's just in the main universe. Definite inspiration, as I mentioned, from the Wonder Woman movie. And I liked his depiction of the Flash time sequences, because not everybody gets that right.
No, I also liked, I mean, it's just ephemera when you consider it in the movie, but I loved the facsimile newsreels for the opening and closing credits.
Yes.
I think that was a really nice touch.
Yeah, I had that under animation. I was going to say exactly the same thing. I love that it's the old-timey war, as if you're watching a movie or a propaganda movie from the 40s, so absolutely love it, yeah. I mean, other than that, because, again, this feeds into animation, but I just noted there are 123 people that worked on this, not including visual effects, just animation, in case anybody's curious how many people it takes to make one of these. I like the cell shading style, I think, is what I tried to sort of think that it was.
It was a nice art style. There's some, you know, nice clear lines, good. I mean, it's not Pixar level, obviously, but there was some deep animation in there.
But again, talking of like individual sequences, I liked the trippy time tunnel sequence when Dr. Fate started appearing to Barry as he was sort of blasting through. Well, what we thought was a time tunnel and was probably actually a time and space tunnel or whatever.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was nice. So, cool. Yeah, so then just to get to some of the writing stuff, then these are just random notes that I made. So there's obviously at the start of the movie a link to Hitler collecting supernatural stuff. Bit of a cliche. We've seen it in multiple things, including the BPRD comics and stuff. And yes, there's rumors of it in real life, but it's a nice way to introduce an actual realistic, horrific jerk to kind of a fantasy universe, I suppose. So
yeah,
they do it in him, Hellboy, and as well, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, but I wasn't sure how I felt about introducing the GSA because it had a very the first Suicide Squad vibe that it was stopping the movie to be like, this is our man, this is what he can do, this is Hawkman, he does this, and I was like, oh, like
it's better than the Illuminati in Doctor Strange.
Oh, again, speaking of cliches, Barry and Iris doing the whole, like, I'm just trying to protect you from my enemies thing. I'm kind of over that now. And I'm a huge fan of it. I love it in, like, the Raimi Spider-Man movies. But whenever I see that cliche in superhero stuff now, I'm like, oh.
I think they were trying to tie it more into the Arrowverse so it would be more accessible. But, just comes across as, say, it's getting a little worn down there.
Yeah, because I know they're going to be fine. And it's always the same argument of, like, well, it doesn't work that way. That's life, isn't it? But anyway.
I always find that kind of argument of I'm trying to protect you a bit patronising to the character that they're saying it to.
Because
the thing is, it's making it sound like that, because it's usually a man saying it to a woman. And at the end of the day, it comes across as a very patronising, sexist thing. Oh, like the woman's not independent, like the woman doesn't have her own, end of the day, it should be a conversation of of equal of respect of going, well, how do you feel about this? Not I'm taking the decision out of your hands and I'm deciding it for you, because
they did kind of address that in this, in which she turned around and she pretty much gave him a dressing down for saying that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that aspect.
But to me, I'm always more interested in, like, and they never seem to take this angle of the angle of, like, if you have to use it as a metaphor, then perhaps superheroes are similar to, like, firefighters or cops, where it's like, if you really want to talk about, like, why I wouldn't want to be so kind of close with a partner, it might be because, well, I could go out and die tomorrow and then you'd be heartbroken. I'd rather that than just, like, well, you'll never be able to protect yourself if my villains come for you, But anyway, that's, again, neither here nor there, really. It's just, that's my preference. Again, I loved the. I actually wrote "Yeah, the Whirlwind Arms," and then the actual dialogue in the film said "a Flash classic," and I was like, "And it is, yay!" I love that they don't shy away from pop culture stuff. So when they mention complicating the timeline, Barry Allen actually says, "I've seen that movie." Yep, fair enough. At least you're addressing this. And it's because, like, they point out that Barry Allen's never heard of them and they must therefore still be a secret. It asks a really big question, which is like, well, what's the point if you're not remembered? And I'm like, damn, that's a big enough question to sustain a movie. And Wonder Woman asks that and then immediately moves on. And I'm like, oh, I want to focus on that for a bit. There's some nice references to Larry Drake and Hawkgirl, the partners of some of the GSA. That's about all I can really say about as I say, I was just writing in shock that they revealed it's a different Earth and blah blah. And I've mentioned already I didn't like the Superman stuff, didn't agree with the writing of the Speed Force being weakened because it doesn't make sense. And then, as you said, DK, by the end there's just too much going on because you're talking about Aquaman and the Atlanteans invade, and I've actually written word for word what you said, it's already World War II, which has now become irrelevant. Which again, it's in the title of your film, you know what I mean? So, and that was my next note. That is like it's just turned into a different movie. There's now like a giant kaiju appearing.
Yeah, I kind of just lost interest at that point.
Yeah, same.
I'm being honest,
I came to generic, and I was like, I came for a kind of World War II hero type adventure, and then like you said, it's just become a generic Saturday morning cartoon basically by the end of it. And I was like, oh, that's a shit. As I said, the Hawkman death, because we knew he was coming back, it didn't really matter. I was like, the tone of this is all over the place. It's going into like four-color heroics to like sad death, but it doesn't matter, to monsters attacking. And I was like, it was fine for the first half, and then it just seems to not pick a tone that it wants to go with.
Yeah.
So again, I was kind of thrown off. I was shocked by the death of Steve Trevor, which again is stupid because he always dies. Yes. But I thought that was way more impactful than the Hawkman death, frankly. Didn't love the whole gag about, oh, I see you've shaved for the occasion when Superman did finally bother his ass to show up. And I thought the ending, the proposal and everything is nice, but it just seemed very abrupt. Although it was nice that, as I think Charles was referencing, there's a little reference when Flash comes back to see Superman about, like, ooh, others will be coming, not just Brainiac, and maybe we could gather together a group of similar people into some kind of, I don't know, league, maybe? So any last thoughts on that before I jump into the sound and music, which was my next note?
I don't know how connected this is, but I just like the fact that they said that if people liked it, if it sold well, you know, we'd do another. And with how well, you know, considering that it was practically a unique film in the sense of, like, we hadn't seen JSA in these DC animated films before. And obviously the person who played the Jay Garrick, it was the first time he played this character. So I was hoping that they would get this chance to, one, develop, two, add more members, and three, give more, just have another, you know, continue this spin-off continuity thing, because they're hoping the same thing will happen with after the Black Adam films come out. They're hoping to spin it off into a JSA spin-off as well.
Yeah, I just hope they do a little better and we develop the characters a bit more and make it an actual Justice Society film and not like a weird mess by the end of the movie, but that's just my opinion, obviously. But what about you, DK? Did you have any? You had something you wanted to say?
Just going on to the dialogue, I thought there were one or two nice lines, nice decisions. You know, where they're just small things, but when they're first introduced to the Atlanteans and the guy's giving this big speech about how they're just monkeys up there, and Flash goes rude.
Yeah, there's a few good little moments.
Yeah, and there's one later on where he says, "I will tell you nothing," mouth breathing, and then Flash just machine gun punches him in the face, and that got a chuckle out of me.
That's in my favourites, so don't steal that from me. But yeah, we'll get to that once I've finished off talking about the other stuff, because I just wanted to mention the original music was by someone called Kevin Riepel, who is basically channeling his inner Hans Zimmer for most of the movie, doing his Wonder Woman theme bit. I liked there's some good dramatic tension music, which you don't always get, especially in these little animations. And from a sound point of view, I was really disappointed because as a big fan of Black Canary, I thought her scream was piss weak until the one point it wasn't supposed to be. And she actually had to kind of bring it because I was like, oh, what's this? It's such a weak, for most of the movie. But again, that's just me being me, I guess. And my final last note just under the other stuff was, if you weren't sure which universe this is, there is one bit of dialogue that hits it right on the head. And I think it's when Steve Trevor dies, when he says, honestly, being with you, I wouldn't trade it for all the tomorrows in the world. So we're in the tomorrowverse, people, if you didn't know that. So, that's any last thoughts then before we jump into favorite character moment and line?
No, I've got nothing.
I mean, I know it's not good to do with anything like that, but just an overall to do with these films. I just think that because they're so popular and so great, I just like them to be more than 75 minutes long.
That's the thing that this one in particular, you're absolutely right, does try to stuff too much in and could definitely have benefited from being a bit longer to give characters room to breathe and stuff. I mean, the ending notwithstanding, which I could probably personally do with a complete rewrite, but it would be nice to have more character beats. Like, as you said, it was cool. You see Dr. Fate and it's kind of this cool idea of he's completely insane, but, you know, he's being held there as a resource.
They've done that quite a few times, though, with Dr. Fate being a bit of a mad person, though, weren't they? They did it in Smallville, and they did it in... What's the thing that I saw? Didn't they do it in Suicide Squad Hell to Pay a bit as well?
A little bit, but I mean, it's still something that it would be nice to explore it a bit more as opposed to just, oh, he's here, oh, he's insane, but we're getting the information and now we're gone. And it's kind of like, oh, that was a bit of a shame, you know? And it never really, for me, explained why he appeared to Flash in the kind of crossing dimensions thing. Like, I know you could theorize about it, but I would have liked a little bit more explanation and a bit more heroic, I guess, urgency.
He did that. All these things in the sequel, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could, definitely. These are all things you could pick up, because, like I said, you've already got a lot of seeds that they've dropped. Like, as I said, just that one throwaway line about, oh, Wonder Woman, I'm sorry about your loss of the loss of Themyscira. And, yeah, absolutely, these are things that could, you could pick up in a sequel and develop a bit more with these characters. So, you never know. But anyway, so favourite character moment and line from the movie. I'm going to go to you first, DK, because we haven't actually told Charles until now that he has to do this, I don't think, that I can remember. so Charles, if you just think... Yeah, if you just think of a favourite character, a favourite moment, and a favourite line, if you can, from the movie. And DK, I'll come to you first and ask, what's your favourite character?
Favourite character? Which is weird, considering what's just been talked about, but I'm going to go with Dr. Fate.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. And
he wasn't an expert to me. He made an impact... He made an impact, but to me, Dr. Fate in anything, you know, I'm a Dr. Fate.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You'll be looking forward to watching Pierce Brosnan in Black Adam, then, I presume.
I will.
Yes, awesome. My favourite character was the Barry Allen Flash, but I said that seems like a cheat because he's obviously like the co-lead. It's a Flash Wonder Woman kind of movie, but I just liked it. I thought Matt Bomer did a good job, and again, I liked that character, so I was there for that. So there you go. What about you, Charles? Who was your favourite character in this?
So, I think I've already mentioned that as like a go-to thing. Like, my favourite character is Jay Garrick. Just because he doesn't look like an ordinary superhero, if that makes sense. Like, not many superheroes wear helmets, and he looks more genuinely 1940s, World War II. But I've always, because of John Rogers and because of just Jay Garrick in general, I have always liked Jay Garrick. So and obviously, as you said, I've not seen this character in film properly before. So just in general, my favourite moment was when the two Flashes worked together to like help bring the plane down, if you remember that, you know, when they were saving.
Great. Yeah, that's cool. So that's your favourite moment, and we'll go around and we'll may as well ask you, DK, what was your favourite moment then in the movie?
I do like the bookended, the end part, and battle with Flash and Brainiac, where he grabs that bullet and just pretty much throws it through his forehead. I think that was just done beautifully.
Yeah, very well animated as well. Fair enough. Mine was the moment you already kind of stole, and it's just this is my kind of sense of humor. But I did love the kind of the Atlantean guy who's like mouth breather. Then the Flash does the rapid like multiple punches, and the guy just goes, "I yield."
Yeah,
so I laughed out loud. I was like, "Yep, that's you've got me. That's my base level of humor right there." You know, right. And then finally, what was your favorite line of dialogue, if you can think of any, Charles, in the movie?
I'll be honest, I can't remember specifically any lines of dialogue in particular, because I've not seen it for a while. But you are jogging my memory for a lot of things that because you said, oh, we'll do like a second review on it. I'd be able to go back after what you said, go back, and because there's a lot of things that you've said that I never noticed myself before. You know what I mean?
Development
and the personality of Dr. Fate or Superman and things like that. Because I was probably mainly too focused on... I also love Hawkman, so I was probably too obsessed with looking at them two. You know, him and Garrett probably too much to the other bits of other people.
Yeah, that's okay. That's fair enough. Well, I'm going to speak for you and say that your favourite line was probably, because I know how much you love The Flash, was probably just, a Flash classic when they do the whirlwind arms, because that was cool.
I do like it.
So what about you, DK? Did you have a favourite line that you noted down?
I like the, tomorrow's never guaranteed, only today, right now. That's why we fight. Right?
Oh, that is good. Damn, that's better than mine. That was really good. That's the kind of thing I should have and would normally have picked, but I was distracted because I'm a big fan of Black Canary. So I was just a sucker for the punch in the air moment, and my favorite line was, "You call that a scream?" when the monster tried roaring at her, and I was just like, "Yes, finally!" Open your mouth and scream, girl. But there we go. but fair enough. So again, Charles, we haven't really mentioned it, but we tend to just do a quick paragraph or two conclusion and then a score out of 5. for the film. So did you want to start us off with that, with yours?
I liked the idea that I mean, personally, I didn't really think that Wonder Woman needed to be in the World War II kind of thing, because I felt like that it reminded me too much of Captain America, and it even though I know that this is the thing, like Wonder Woman and Captain America are very similar in terms of that particular, you know, war and what they do in that, you know, they're very basically like the super soldier version that basically helps them get through it. And there's two reasons why I don't like that. You know, I know that Captain America is meant to be in that from that era, but you know, and I know that Wonder Woman is obviously meant from that era as well, but like I've always viewed mostly Wonder Woman as a present day character. And I also, the reason why I mainly prefer the Captain America version of being World War II Wonder Woman is because Wonder Woman's an Amazon from a paradise island, whereas Captain America was an actual soldier, an actual human being in the World War.
And an American, which helps,
which wanted to help, do you know what I mean? Felt that the Wonder Woman thing, like, it would have worked well just as a JSA film without the Wonder Woman being there.
Right. Got you,
Do you know what I mean? So that was why I didn't, and I couldn't really connect. I didn't, you know, it was nice that Wonder Woman was like a sort of like a leader, and I kind of got used to it through the film. But when I first heard of the premise, I wasn't too keen on it, but I did like it in the end.
Fair enough. So what would you give it out of 5 stars?
Because I'm a massive fan of the JSA and it's their first proper film, and it gave exposure to like this format and media that I hadn't been in before, I'd probably say like 4 out of 5.
Like 4 out of 5, no problem. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's on the books then. So what about you, DK? Did you have your conclusion and score out of 5?
I do. Just to say it is a decent enough film, taking slightly different time many of the DC Animated Universe entries, allowing it to shift its focus, albeit slightly, to other lesser-known heroes. With a pseudo-time travel tale that serves to introduce its audience to something outside of the norm. The artwork's clean, with good character design and a crispness to the animation that gives it a ring of quality. It's more Saturday morning cartoon than Disney standard, but even so, the artwork deserves to be commended. The voice actors are competent, with the leads, Katik and Bulma, relaxed and at home in a voice recording studio, allowing them to imbue their respective characters with a more nuanced approach that would normally be expected. Even so, I wasn't entirely convinced by Katik's accent. The script begins really well and draws the viewer in, but for me, towards the end, it loses its allure as the unique aspects of the storyline are put to one side for one with more familiarity. And personally, I felt lost a great deal in this execution. I was more entertained than I initially thought I would be, and while it's not perfect, it gives the viewer enough enticements to keep them watching. Truth be told, if there were more appearances of actual JSA characters, I would be on board for that in the future. And I'd give it 3 out of 5.
Okay, fair enough. Right, so I will give you my conclusion and score then, and then we'll work out the overall average. My conclusion, again, I've just said, apologies, it sounds like I'm reading it. I am. So an overstuffed movie, not unlike DC's live-action output. It starts with potential to be an intriguing heroes during the horrors of real war story, but devolves into over-the-top supervillain mind-controlling an army kaiju nonsense. There's too many heroes, plot threads, and tones, and that's a shame because cutting a few things would have given a much better movie, in my opinion. There are moments of brilliance from heroes who do get to be heroic and virtuous. There's some interesting mysteries and some cool comics-inspired twists. The voice acting is great. The action is very well done. The animation is gorgeous. It just collapses under its own weight in the final act because it escalates too far. Again, pretty familiar. I also would have liked to see more exploration of the actual JSA, as you said, who are sidelined background characters for most of the film. Enjoyable but a bit shallow, fun but forgettable, good but disappointing. I'm literally torn down the middle, so I kind of have to give it 2.5 out of 5.
That's a fair enough assessment, I think.
So, yeah, let me just work out the average then. So the overall average then for the podcast, the final score for Justice Society World War II comes out as 3.16 recurring out of 5. So, you know, we may as well say 3 out of 5. Ultimately, it's just as close as dang it to that. So that's not bad, I think, for that. The next section, just to finish things off, would be the audience interaction section, which, again, I put out a tweet, as we always do. What did you think of this movie? Have you seen it? We got one reply from Max Ingram at Sleeping Logs Die, a regular contributor, who just says, I saw it a couple of days ago, really enjoyed it. I thought Wonder Woman and all the characters had some really great moments. My favorite was when she launched herself from a torpedo tube to play discus with Nazi depth charges. So, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. And if you bear with me 1 minute, I may see if I can find a really hot take that we can just quickly award this to, if anybody said anything especially dumb on Letterboxd. Yeah, most people anywhere between kind of 2.5 and 4, which is basically us, essentially. Yeah. The best review that I found that at least made me laugh, Bro Mero gave it 3 stars, but I love that the review is just, we live in a justice society. Oh. I think that's the hot take for this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done, Bro Mero. You get that one. So awesome. So that's that'll conclude things then for this particular episode. Hopefully we haven't bored you to death talking things DC. What's left to do is to thank Charles for being a first-time guest and a great one. Thank you, Charles, for coming and talking all things DC.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for having me. And nice to be offered the chance to do it, because I've never done anything like this before, so I didn't know how it was going to play out. So, thank you for letting me join, and I hope I've been all right on the podcast.
Yeah. Always nice to meet a fellow geek and somebody who's passionate about this kind of stuff, so awesome. So thanks again. Did you have any kind of socials or anything you wanted to plug, Charles, before we go?
I don't have anything. I mean, I'm on Twitter quite a lot, but I don't have anything, and I've got like a YouTube thing that I don't use very much.
Fair enough. Well, we'll pop your Twitter, if you don't mind, we'll pop your Twitter in the description, and people can sort of always follow you there if need be.
That's mainly where my this kind of interaction comes from. Like, don't really go on like Facebook or anything, so the main part would be, you know, Twitter.
Yeah, I think we're all the same. So, and as usual, you can find all of our information in the description. We will eventually get around to recording an outro with this all on, but you can find the podcast information on all social medias in the description, as well as our personal Twitters and Letterboxds and everything. So just click on the description below if you want to find all that. Anything else you wanted to plug, DK? Or
no, everything you've covered, everything's in the description.
Yeah, exactly. So our next episode, when we come back, is going to be another top 10 episode, just a little bit different. And this will be top 10 DC movies, fittingly. So, hey, maybe we can even discuss DC on that for a bit. We're still finalizing some guests, but I think we have a couple of interested parties. Did you ask Nick, by the way, DK, if he would do that?
Yeah, Nick's up for it. Nick will be coming back if he's welcome.
Definitely, yeah. Well, Nick and Theo, I think, will be the others. Very interesting. I think it's going to be a way more varied list than the Marvel top 10 we did. So, hopefully that will be good. And that's all about it. In the meantime, everybody, do come back. And in the epic words of Arnie, I'll be back.
Thank you.